Good evening and welcome. It's KBC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight's program is a re-airing of three interviews from Mindy McNeil, who interned at KVCR-FM a few years ago and has most recently been at KUVO in Denver. Mindy passed away just last week. With a remembrance then, I've retrieved interviews which have Mindy checking out a few different subjects with the same great interest and enthusiasm, something which came through every time. We'll hear about Tio's Tacos in Riverside, a family-operated business that's as much a place for food as it is for a wide variety of arts. Later in the program, we'll have conversation with comedian Brad Williams. We'll start with Mindy finding out more about the historic California Theater of the Performing Arts in San Bernardino, a rich history and more. Here she is in conversation with Owen Sheeran.
What type of formula do you all use to select the acts or the performances that are going to be held there?
Our producers, Joseph Hinson and Alan Evenson, work really hard, sometimes years in advance, at setting up a season. And they are looking at a variety of things to decide what they're going to do. They're going to certainly look at popular culture. They're going to look at those shows that have been very successful in the past, not only here but around the world. They also actually ask their subscribers on Facebook. They're always asking subscribers what they think of a certain show, or would they like to see this show, or would they like to see another show. So it's kind of a continuous process for them to look at shows and see what's going to draw an audience in, what do audiences want to see, and how can we best do that. I work for Theatrical Arts International, so we manage the theater for the city of San Bernardino, who owns the California Theater, and we have a sister theater that the city owns as well that's called Sturgis Center for the Fine Arts, and that's just a few blocks away from us. And so Theatrical Arts presents a season of their shows. There's another organization called Worldwide Theatricals. They also present four shows a year at the California. In addition, the San Bernardino Symphony does five concerts a year, and then Sinfonia Mexicana does several concerts a year focused on Mexican symphony music and mariachi music. And then lastly, Inland Dance Theater is based in San Bernardino. So there are five main organizations that produce shows for the California. And then we also bring in some touring shows as well. And we rent the theater out to various organizations and schools for different functions throughout the whole year.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of things that are going on and can be taken care of there. And I love the thing that you said, like, you know, you're asking your Facebook viewers different things like that. I appreciate that you're involving the patrons. You know, it's really nice to see, oh, I voted to have 9 to 5 come. You know, I wanted this, or I wanted the Nutcracker, you know, different things. And so it makes me invested in this, and I'm a part of this.
Oh, absolutely. And we want our audience members, our subscribers, to be invested in what goes on at the California Theater. You know, there's a lot of entertainment for people to choose from, and we certainly feel very honored when people become subscribers or they come to a single show because they know us and they trust us to present good quality entertainment at affordable prices. It's convenient for them. They don't have to drive to Los Angeles or someplace else to see a show. They can get good quality entertainment here in the Inland Empire.
And you said that people can rely on that. And it's because I think there's such a rich history, because I think the theater itself has been around since the 1920s.
Yeah, actually, the theater was built in 1928, and it was originally built as a vaudeville house for the vaudeville circuit, you know, and a lot of younger people don't know what vaudeville is, but it really was a national circuit of entertainers, and it could be everyone from comedians to jugglers to dog acts to singers and magicians and just a wide variety of people who were on a circuit that would come and play different houses throughout the country. And a lot of famous movie stars and celebrities actually got their start in vaudeville. And then it also became a movie house. And when it was first a movie house, they were silent films. And for that reason, when the theater was built, what was installed was a mighty Wurlitzer organ that was used to play during silent films. And that organ is still in the theater. It is only one of three models left in the world, and it is the only mighty Wurlitzer organ that has remained in its birthplace. It's been there since day one, and that's the only one in Southern California that is. Other theaters have organs that have been shipped there and put back together and renovated, but our mighty Wurlitzer organ has been there the whole time, and it has been lovingly restored over the years, and that's kind of an ongoing process because it is an old instrument. instrument. And every once in a while, we will show a silent film, and we'll have an organist come in and play original scores that went with that particular film. And audience just absolutely love it. But it is a real historical gem that has been renovated and taken care of over the years. And it really is a treasure of downtown San Bernardino.
I like that, the interaction, because I can see somebody right in front of me playing the organ while I'm still watching, this film from the 30s or 40s.
Yeah, it's a wonderful experience. And, we're always looking for an opportunity to be able to do that.
Is the Wurlitzer the only thing that is left in its own original form or construction?
Oh, no, the whole building is. It really is. I mean, what has changed over the years from 1928 to the present, and certainly we have upgraded it and we've made it earthquake safe, and there have been renovations and restorations throughout the time there. Now we have a lovely reception room that was renovated a number of years ago called the California Room. Other rooms that were in use during the early days of the California Theater, if you look at the theater from the outside, there were actually retail shops down below on the ground level. So the California was there, the lobby and the staircase and the theater itself. But there were retail shops not only downstairs but upstairs. There was a barber shop at one time. There were offices downstairs and other retail shops. So over the years, those left and those areas were renovated, and now we have offices there. We have the Will Rogers Room, which is our lounge. Upstairs, we have our reception room, the California Room. We have a catering kitchen. And so it has been, renovated and restored over the years. But its heart is really still right there from the very beginning.
You mentioned Will Rogers. I think I heard a rumor or something. Did he perform his last performance there?
Yeah, he did. Will Rogers came to the California Theater in 1935 to take part in a benefit for the Salvation Army. And there were a number of stars that came with him, some stars that people might recognize. There was an actress by the name of Jane Withers, and she was a child actress. She came. Other folks came to raise money for the Salvation Army. And then, tragically, Will Rogers was killed, I think, within a few months after leaving the California Theater, maybe within a month, when he and his pilot and good friend Wiley Post were in Alaska and the plane crashed, and both were tragically killed. So Will Rogers gave his very last stage performance at the California Theater. There is a sign, there is a historical sign out in front of the theater that states this, and we have different plaques inside the theater that recognize and honor Will Rogers. He was the Mark Twain of his time, so it's very important to keep that memory alive.
And I love that, the rich history, and like you said, it's taking some of the past, we can pass it on to the new generation now who may not know what vaudeville is or Will Rogers, different things like that. So there is great history at this
point. Oh, sure. I mean, we try to keep that history alive. We have a photo mural up in the hallway into one of the dressing room areas. It's a collage of all these different celebrities that have performed there. Everyone from Bob Hope to Roy Rogers to the Three Stooges, Joanne Worley, Tab Hunter, Rock Hudson, Yul Brynner, Carol Burnett, all these fabulous stars that have performed there over the years. After it was a movie house just for silent films, then talkies came in and it became a regular movie house for many, many years. I grew up in San Bernardino and I remember going there to see movies when I was a kid. And then an organization called the San Bernardino Civic Light Opera came in and they took over the theater and they presented a series of, I think, 5 shows a year. They always were musicals mainly. And they brought in all these celebrities to play the lead roles, whether it was The Music Man or it was The King and I or all these very famous musicals. So all these celebrities came in and they were hired for the lead roles, and then other actors were hired. And then local actors, singers, and dancers were also hired to fill in for the roles and for the chorus. And so San Bernardino Civic Light Opera was very, very successful, and then sadly that declined, and then over the years Theatrical Arts took it over and has tried to continue that tradition of good quality entertainment, whether it's a musical or it's a play or it's a concert. And so it really has been a lot of people and a lot of organizations that have recognized what a beautiful facility this is and what it means to the city of San Bernardino. And the city of San Bernardino has just been so faithful of keeping up the building, and their support and guidance is immeasurable.
You know what? And I love that, because it's San Bernardino itself giving back in that sense. Who in the past have you had?
Oh, boy, we've had everyone from Joan Rivers to Jerry Seinfeld. You mentioned Brad Garrett. Michael Bolton performed there. Bands like Foreigner and Blue Oyster Cult, and we've had country bands and country performers. And during that time, several years ago, we were also privileged to be able to have the theater used by Showtime. Showtime filmed 11 comedy specials at the California Theater over, I think it was a four-day period. And you can still see those on Showtime occasionally. And it's a really lovely way to experience the California Theater by seeing something on television that was filmed there.
How big is the facility?
We seat about 1,720, so 1,720. Our sister theater, Sturgis, seats 700, so it's considerably smaller than we are. But really, there is not a bad seat in the house. A lot of people enjoy seeing shows from the balcony because it gives you the wide expanse of the entire stage. Other people prefer downstairs and a little bit more up close to the action. So there are no pillars in the way to spoil your sight lines. And even in the least expensive seats, way up in the balcony, you can still see the stage clearly. And we have a wonderful sound system. We have wonderful technicians. We're able to really put on a good show.
Touring companies have come through, but I wanted to find out, too, do you all ever do anything that's like your own original people doing something there as well, like you're hiring your own cast
and
crew?
Well, in fact, you know, all the shows that Theatrical Arts is doing and Worldwide is doing, those are our own shows. So those are shows that we mount everything from auditions, and we usually hold auditions in Los Angeles, and we use professional and non-professional actors.
How, though, did it go from being a house, basically, that would have movies in vaudeville to going to this
year? Well, I think that was just kind of a logical progression for the theater itself. As I said, it started as a vaudeville house and a house for silent movies. And then when talkies came along, it was just logical to start showing more movies. And vaudeville was phasing out. You know, when talkies came in, 1930s was kind of the end of vaudeville. You know, that kind of ended and talkies came in, and then certainly the advent of television. People's entertainment choices were being changed. I remember seeing movies there as a kid. I remember seeing Ben-Hur in 1959. I remember seeing Peter Sellers' movies there. And so it was just kind of a logical progression that it became a full movie house for many, many years. And then as more movie theaters were being built, taking away audiences from established theaters. At that time, there were many other theaters that were coming up in San Bernardino, just a short walk away on East Street, that are no longer there. So there was competition. As with any business, there is competition. More movie theaters were built. And so it really fell into decline in terms of showing movies. But that's when San Bernardino Civic Light Opera stepped in and said, you know what, we'd like to take this building back to what it was designed for, and that was for live entertainment. And that's exactly what they did, and they were very successful for many, many years. And then eventually when Theatrical Arts came in, we wanted to continue that tradition of live entertainment. And really the only movies that are shown there now are every once in a while we'll show a silent film and have someone come in and play the Mighty Wurlitzer organ. So it was just kind of a logical thing, and it kind of happened in communities throughout the nation. Silent films had their heyday, vaudeville had their heyday, and then the talkies came in. And then the advent of radio and TV also took audiences away. And then with regular movie theaters being built, there was more and more competition for the entertainment dollar. You can go online and see a list of all the shows, and that's really easy to remember. It's just California Theater with an R-E, not an E-R, californiatheater.net. You can see all of our shows. You can see a little bit about the history of the theater. There's information in there on how to volunteer to be an usher.
And where are you all located again?
We are right downtown San Bernardino. It's 562 West 4th Street, and we're between E and F Streets. There's plenty of free parking at the old Carousel Mall. Lots of parking there. There's some parking behind us. It really is a safe place to come down to. There's lots of people around. You know, I think San Bernardino has gotten a bad rap over the years of being a place that you don't want to go downtown after dark, and that really is a fallacy. It's a safe environment. It's a fun environment. And, you know, we'd like to have people come down and experience it.
And I'm sure they will. It really paints a good visual for me of what I could expect there. And could I even become a season ticket holder or a pass holder? Or how does that?
Yeah. And, you know, season ticket holders do get a break with pricing. We have some really good pricing for season subscribers. And it's a lot less expensive than if you buy single tickets. Plus, you get your choice of the seats that you want and what shows you want to go to. Most of these shows are anywhere between 2 and 4, sometimes even 5 performances. So you get to pick the seats that you want, and season subscribers get their pick first. And then at the same time, the Symphony also has their season, and they do their subscription drive. Sinfonia does theirs. There's always an opportunity to get good tickets, good seats, at good prices.
And that, especially in this economy, that's what's needed. So I thank you so much, Owen, for being a part of KVC Arts today.
Oh, it is my pleasure, Mindy. KVCR has been a great supporter of us over the years, and we want that relationship to continue. And certainly anything that we can do to help promote you as you're promoting us, that would be super.
That was Owen Sheeran with the California Theater of the Performing Arts in San Bernardino in conversation with Mindy McNeil. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Tonight's show is just as much about arts and entertainment as it is a show about remembering Mindy McNeil, who used to intern at KVCR and moved on to KUVO in Denver. Mindy passed away last week. Later in the program, we'll hear Mindy's conversation with comedian Brad Williams from when he was set to appear at the Ontario Improv. First, though, Mindy checking out a regional attraction as well as a place to eat, Tio's Tacos in Riverside. Here's Mindy in conversation with one member of this family-run business, Stephanie Sanchez.
So Tio's Tacos is located in Riverside, down from the Mission Inn. It's got great food. I've been there before. Basically, I get my order. I go out back. I'm walking out the door to the backyard. What am I seeing when I walk back out there?
When you walk into Tio's Tacos, at first, if you walk into the front, you might think it's an ordinary, you know, taco shop with Mexican rocorico decorations. But once you walk through the back doors, you realize that it's something that has practically never been done before. We like to call out my dad that organized hoarder. And the reason we say that is because all the pieces and the sculptures that he creates, they're actually made out of recycled material. And you can find anything from a chapel made out of beer bottles. We have a teepee. Also, it's kind of like a backward cylinder cone, also made out of bottles. There's one of the patios. There's many different sculptures representing many different parts of his life.
Yeah, because you mentioned that basically what I've read too and heard about, he takes trash or discarded items and he recycles those and turns that into art. So how did he come up with that concept?
The whole concept of creating this place actually began as a gardening project. Since the property that we do own is half commercial, half residential, the back area was used, you know, as any other ordinary house in our backyard. You know, he would be done with his shift inside. He would work on the recipes and inside of the restaurant. He would actually go out back and do gardening. And the reason that he started getting into all of those materials was because about 18 years ago, before recycling was popular, we'd put all those materials aside. And whenever, you know, he would get a bunch of them, of bottles, of shells, of any material that, you know, nowadays we recycle, you know, as a lifestyle or a lot of people call it as a trend, it actually became a material that he could work with, but as a gardening project that he had for, you know, his backyard. So it just started expanding from a small gardening project into what it is now.
And how many square feet do you think that is? Because I went back there and I'm like, this is pretty big.
It's half a block. I know that it's four properties in one. I believe I've heard my dad say it's about half an acre. It is a pretty big piece of land that we have here.
And I know you mentioned the chapel. So he created that for your mom? What was his inspiration for that?
Yeah, growing up, my parents are both from a little town in Mexico called Tlahuaya, Michoacán, which is about half an hour away from Guadalajara. And in Mexico, a lot of, you know, the big ranches and things like that, they had a little private place where you could worship, but it was more private. You know, in home instead of, you know, going to the one in town. So my mom always wanted one. And since we live here and we work here, my dad actually did that as a present for her in his own version using different material. But yeah, that was actually something that my mom always really wanted to have at home. So he actually created that for her.
And how long was that construction? Like, how long did that take?
At most, no more than 4 months. In the beginning, it actually started as a glass house. Since he has all kinds of weird ideas, he would always be knocking down, building back up, but no more than 4 months.
And do you all have weddings there? I mean, yeah, because I think it's been like quinceañeras have been there, weddings, different things.
Yes, in the chapel, we've hosted many different events from quinceañeras to weddings to anniversaries, vow renewals. We've hosted, you know, people do ceremonies for graduation. There's many different events that we've done there, but and it's open for anyone, you know, if we don't specify any kind of religion or anything like that. This place is very diverse. and we like to keep it that way.
So pretty much open to all faiths, whoever wants to take part in
yes.
that. Yeah, because I'm looking, actually, the mural that's like up in the ceiling, and it's just amazing. It's like you've got the angels there, you've got Jesus, there's the cross, there's so many different things. I don't know if that's Moses up there as well.
Yeah, those paintings, actually, my dad doesn't do the paintings. He has a guy that does them for him. He actually just designs them, and that guy is also from Mexico, from Nayarit. And he's the one that comes in and paints them for him. But up on top of the roof of the chapel, we do have many different parts that my dad believes are important. And also, if you notice up at the top, I think it's a crowning of the Virgin Mary that he has up there. There's actually a 3D crown, and that's the one that I used for my quinceañera, and he put it up there just to make it look 3D.
What motivates him, do you think? Because, I mean, there's one picture, there's like a, it looks like a little gnome holding its mouth, but he's like guarding a bicycle that seems to be embedded into the ground.
Most of the things that he does, he always says that it's an impulse of how he grew up. Growing up, he started working since he was about 5 years old. His dad actually passed away at the age of 40. And being the 11th child, my grandma had 12 children. And being a widow very young, they all had to be on their own, and they all had to start working. So the fact that at the age of 5, he had to start working, he had no childhood. He became a shoe shiner. And in the process of being a shoe shiner, and he says in the process of trying to survive, you kind of miss out on other things. So he never had a childhood. So when he came over to America, he said that he's seen that just, you know, walking down the street, you could find many articles, you know, that people, you know, don't like anymore. They don't match. They're broken. They're scratched. And people just toss it out in the trash. So he felt very bad because in Mexico, he didn't have any of those items. He was, you know, playing with bottle caps of cars, you know, batteries, old tires and things like that that we here use as trash. But over there, those were his toys, his items, his everyday items that he would use. So coming here, it kind of opened his eyes and he tried to make things more than one use. He grew up in a very hard poverty area. So I think that's what made him what I call an organized hoarder. Because he wanted to save everything, accumulate everything, and just fix it and do something more of it, not just use it one time and have a scratch and throw it out.
And it's just amazing because if you go, you know, and you look at the pictures or if you go and you visit, it's just amazing because to see how his mind works, you know, because like I said, there's the chapel, he's got a gnome sitting there, he's got the bicycle built in also, he's got a warrior, it looks like the warrior is on a donkey, you know, and so I'm just like, is it just something he just sees and he's like, this is what I want and I just want to bring it to creation, or is it something that's inspiring him?
So a lot of the times, it all depends. He said before that, you know, he's at night and he's sleeping and here and there, he has a certain material that he has to work with. Let's say, for example, you know, during a month, we have a large amount of bottles. So in his mind, he knows he has bottles. He's up things to create with that. So then he wakes up and he starts putting things together. And none of the things on the property actually finished due to the reason that either he runs out of material, he doesn't like it, or he thinks of something else for another project. So he stops and he goes to another one. And then he's also always said that he's just an instrument. My dad's very religious. We've grown up Catholic, so he's always said he's just an instrument of God and doing the will. And a lot of the times, I've actually, now as I'm older, and I started to know that on different projects, it depicts different parts of whatever, either what we're going through, what he went through, but it also varies on the material, like I said before. But there's definitely a connection between everything that he's been through.
For you, what is your favorite thing there?
My favorite thing would have to be the teepee. It's actually, it's broken now, but normally water comes out through the outside of it. And if you walk through the inside, there's like a sun with like a spiral swirl in the middle. And when the fountain is actually working, the water comes out through the outside of the bottle, ending into the middle of the inside of it. And it swirls back again so it could filter and go up to the top again. But that was my favorite one.
Wow. And it's just amazing because people say, oh, it's just junk. Some call it folk art. Like, what's the difference, do you think, between junk art and folk art?
You know, since our crowd is growing, we're getting all kinds of, you know, good criticism, bad criticism. And I really do believe that at the end of the day is what you are into, what you might call it. We've had people that say, you know, it's just garbage. And then we've had other people that just say, you know, it's amazing how to do things like that. And the other thing is he doesn't really categorize himself like as an artist or anything like that. He just says he just does whatever he likes to do. And then people will like it and other people won't. So I don't think we've actually put what he does in some kind of category.
How is it for you? You walk out back and it's like, okay, wait a minute, that was the doll that I played with when I was a little girl, or hey, that was the shoe I thought was lost. You know, what is that like for you?
Me and my sisters always talk about how our life and our childhood is literally depicted on the property. In different stages of our lives are imprinted on the floor, on the roof, on the trees, on different places. So as we walk around, it's very interesting, you know, when we walk out to take out the trash or when you pull up to the house or things like that, we're just walking by, to hear people explaining it to other people, and sometimes their stories are kind of not what that piece actually is, but it's really interesting to live here, and I think we're very special. And we're one of a kind, I could say, to be able to live and work on the same place.
Makes it very convenient, I bet.
Yeah, at times. It can be very hectic, though, because at the same time, we don't have that. You drive to work and things like that. So it has its pros and its cons, but I think that growing up here, we're used to it now. Me and my sisters always argue about not having a normal life. You know, we don't have neighbors and things like that. But it's something that as we grow older, you know, we do realize that we're very lucky to have.
And that is a good thing, because then you actually have each other at the same time, so that helps.
Yes.
So what happens if he runs out of space? I mean, is he going to take stuff down, or does he try to get more land?
I think what actually would happen was that we would run out of land, because I know for now, for sure, he's actually saying that we're running out of place to put things. So that's why he started putting things on the roof and things like that. But I don't think we would run out of material. As long as, you know, the restaurant is open and he's still well, he will find other materials to work with, maybe, and things like that. So I think as long as he's alive and well, I think it will continue.
You know, you did mention, you know, like there's been quinceañeras, there's weddings, different things, and there's maybe concerts that happen there or artists come and perform.
Yeah, we've had other events. We've hosted Saturation where bands come and play. We've hosted a couple other ones, Trolley Dances, where dancers would hop on a bus and they would stop and dance in various places. We've also had local bands come and practice. My dad's always welcome anything. You know, it's a community place. If there's a purpose that you could come in and make a meeting or, you know, simply practice for your band or just have a gathering for whatever reason it is, we're always open to having that. So, yeah, we have different things that go on, not just weddings and receptions and things like that. It's a variety and it ranges.
Okay, so I'm coming there and I'm seeing a band, but I also want to get something to eat. What is some good stuff that's on the menu there for people who have not been there?
The most popular menu that we would have, and actually created by my dad, it's tilapia or the catfish, and it's a whole deep fried fish, and there's a unique sauce that he puts together. It's full of a lot of flavor sauce that we put on top. It's actually making my mouth water, but that one's really good, and that one's really popular, as well as like the shrimp cocktails. The tacos are really good, and we have a very wide menu. It's not, you know, just a couple of items.
Do you have regulars who keep coming back over and over, just even maybe go to the backyard, don't even buy food, or how does that work as well?
Yeah, we've actually had customers that actually recognize us, or they ask how my parents are doing, because they've been customers even before my parents had this property. They used to sell tacos on a taco stand in Rubido. And then from that, they actually were able to rent this place out, and then, you know, it started growing and growing. So we have customers from 20 years ago that come by and they say, I still remember when your parents used to sell out in the streets. And then we also do have customers who just come in, they pray, some people come in just to study, and the place is open for that. And then we also had study groups and meetings and things like that, so you could just come, stop by, take a look. We've also had photography classes from different universities, since we are kind of in the middle of RCC and UTR. A lot of special ed classes from Rubido, Arlington come over, they bring their kids on field trips. Depending on the day, you know, you could find a variety of people here. And it's not just mostly Hispanics. This year, we've actually seen our clientele grow, you know, in ways that I don't think a lot of Mexican food restaurants actually have experienced, the culture variety that we have here.
And I think, too, the artwork, it really, you know, the food is good. The food is great, you know, but I'm sure the artwork lends to that as well.
Yes. He's always said that there's always going to be a really good Mexican food restaurant, but he wanted to be that one unique Mexican food restaurant where, you know, you can't find anywhere else. And there's great food everywhere, but he wanted to find a great combination in between the great food and great ambience.
You know, and speaking of your customers, though, I've heard rumors that customers bring things to your dad to have him put it on display or have him create something with it.
Yeah, honestly, it's been, you know, these past 2 years that people have been, you know, knowing about this place and they're interested and they always want to know. And we've had customers bring things and say, I want to know what you can do with it and things like that. But the majority of the things, I'd say about 95% of the things that are out there are all been used in our household or either the restaurant. But yeah, people do donate things.
What's maybe something that stood out to you, like a customer bringing to drop off, or it's been like, whoa, what is this?
I remember, it's actually not up anymore, but a couple of years back, I don't know if some people might remember, but there was a pine tree that was really, really tall in the parking lot, and there was a scuba diver outfit on there. And that one was a story of a family that donated that scuba outfit to us. It was a grandfather that passed away. He liked scuba diving, and they just gave it to my dad, and they just said, well, you know, they didn't want to throw it out. Can you do something with it? So my dad got the idea of climbing that pine tree all the way to the top. He actually filled the scuba suit, and he made like a recycled scuba helmet, and he actually put it up at the top. So at the time when you were standing in the parking lot and you would look up with the blue skies and the scuba outfit and the trees, it made it look like if you were underwater. But that's actually not there anymore. That tree actually dried out, so it had to be cut down. But that was the one that actually stood out to me the most.
Wow. And I like the whole water concept that is under.
Yeah, I never really understood it until years later. It actually did seem like you were underwater if you would look up.
Now, what is something your dad has done and you're like, this is crazy or this is out there? Has there been something like that?
There's actually been a lot of things that me and my sisters and my mom were always just like, what is that? And I think throughout the years we've learned just to kind of just let him do his own thing. And he'll eventually, I don't know, either bring it down or something. But in the beginning, when he would tell us that he was going to do certain items or things like that, we actually thought for a minute that he was actually losing it. Because if you explain any of the items that we have here to anybody that hasn't seen them, it doesn't make sense, and you can't even put it together because it's never been seen. We've been compared to the, you know, the watchtowers, but it's nothing close to it, because if you bring it all down, it's all trash. So when he would tell us, like, oh, I'm going to do this out of this, and we would just look at him like, okay. And there was a lot of arguments in between my sisters, my mom, and my dad. You know, we were trying to keep him sane at the time. But yeah, there's a lot of different things that, you know, he's done that were kind of weird. And one of them, I think it was the one that stands out to me. I think there's like a dinosaur that he filled up, and there's like a person head at the bottom, and it has like hands on the side, like if the dinosaur swallowed it. It varies a lot on people and things like that. But I think that one's very weird as well.
So he's had to take some things down. What happens to that? Does that just then become trash, or does he try to find another way to recycle it for another time? Or
there's certain things that, you know, after a while, if there's no possible use for it, then, you know, he throws it out. But we're very big on recycling, so he does that as well. So if he can't find something for it, then we, you know, recycle it or just toss it out if there's no other use for it.
Are there photos on your website?
We're actually just working on a website. Right now we use Instagram or Facebook. Okay. And that's the one that, you know, to keep updated with most of the things that he's been doing lately, is Facebook or Instagram.
Honestly, Stephanie, this is great. This is a lot. I know our listeners are going to really appreciate it. And thank you so much just for your time and being a part of the KVC Arts program.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. You know, my dad always says, mi casa es tu casa. So, you know, if they do have the chance to come by, you know, it'd be great. And yeah, they're more than welcome.
Thank you so much. And you said you're available on Instagram and Facebook as well. They just Instagram or Facebook Tio's Tacos?
Yes. On Facebook is Tio's Tacos Riverside. Yeah.
That was Stephanie Sanchez of Tio's Tacos in Riverside in conversation with Mindy McNeil. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Let's go now back to Mindy McNeil. Mindy was an intern at KVCR several years ago and produced some interviews for me to use on KVC Arts. Mindy recently was working at KUVO in Denver. KVCR learned that Mindy passed away last week. Showing Mindy's ability to tackle any subject with the same passion. Earlier, we heard about the historic California Theater of the Performing Arts in San Bernardino, as well as Tio's Tacos in Riverside. Let's go now to Mindy in conversation with comedian Brad Williams from when he was set to perform at the Ontario Improv.
That's actually the club where my career was kind of made. I was in the audience of a Carlos Mencia show, and he was making fun of midgets. And half the crowd was laughing, and the crowd that was sitting by me was not laughing because they could see me. And Mencia kind of looked over and said, "Why are you guys laughing? What, is one of them here?" I raised my creepy little hand in the air, and he called me up on stage, asked me some questions. I gave him some answers. They got laughs. And when that happened, I knew I need to be a comedian. And that's when I was 19. So I immediately dropped out of college and started doing stand-up comedy. So I always have a special place in my heart for the Ontario Improv.
Oh, my gosh. So a star was born, like, right then and there, huh?
Exactly. I think that night, I ended up putting on some, like, Mexican cowboy boots and dancing in front of the audience, and ended up giving a woman a lap dance, which became my closing joke for in the last 10 years. So, you literally trace all the debauchery in my life back to the Ontario Improv. So I like to give back, and I like to provide them with a little debauchery myself.
You know, and I love that because, you know, I've had some places where, you know, if you get your start with something that's my home base, I'm going to keep going there all the time.
Yeah, it's funny because I was born and raised in Orange County, California, yet I consider the Ontario Improv my home club.
So once again, those are your peeps. That's your family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask, what is it like being out on the road with Carlos?
It was fun. I got to learn. That was right when the Mind of Mencia stuff was going on, so I got to be on his show, which means I got to dress up in a lot of funny outfits and hump so many objects. That was pretty much my role in the show, like official humper.
Okay.
Like, they pretty much just thought, well, what's funnier than a dwarf humping something? Not much, so let's try to include that in as many sketches as possible. It was a blast, but yeah, for the last 6 years, I've been headlining on my own, and I certainly cherish my time with Mencia, but I definitely enjoy being out on my own more just because now it's my show. Now I get to do what I want to do, and I get to be on stage for a full hour. And who doesn't want to look at a dwarf telling jokes for an hour? It's great.
You're headlining, baby. That's what works. So.
Yeah.
And how is that? Like, did you automatically, I know you were like opening up for him, but like in other venues, like an improv or like a Comedy Works or someplace mm-hmm. else, did you automatically become a headliner because you had been opening up for him? Or did you have to make your way from opening act to finally getting your own thing doing headlining?
It's funny because when you're known as an opening act for a while, then other clubs are kind of hesitant to take a chance on you because you're an opening act. But thankfully, some clubs took a chance on me, the Ontario Improv being one of them, and let me have my own weekends there, and they went well. So then other clubs just kind of hopped on board and started scooping me up.
Okay, and you know, I know you did some stuff on Leno, you did Jimmy Kimmel. Is it because of you doing the headlining, or did you have to go out and audition? How did you get that type of work?
Pretty much the stuff on Leno was I played a leprechaun, and the stuff on Kimmel was like I would play a demonic Chucky doll. So pretty much they needed a little person that was willing to make an ass of himself, and I'm pretty much on the top of that list in Hollywood. So yeah, I had to audition for those things. I mean, every now and then someone like a friend would help me out. I know Jim Jeffries had me on his show Legit that was on FX, and he threw me on that show just because we're buddies. But yeah, for the most part, I still have to go out and audition just like everyone else. What's funny is that when I audition for roles that are specifically little people, there's only about 12 of us in Hollywood that do every part, so it's kind of the same 12 people at every audition, and you kind of get to know these guys, like, you know their backstories. So we see each other at auditions, and we have conversations that we left off the last time we had an audition. It's kind of cool that way.
So it's like your own little group, your own buddy system, yeah.
It's funny because, like, people think they're insulting me when they say, oh, I know this other dwarf. Do you know him? And it's like, I want to get mad, but I can't because I do know him. It's that kind of community where we literally do all know each other.
Okay. What's it like being on the road? Because I was looking at your website, and I'm like, you're going to Denver, you're going to Baltimore, you're going to Sacramento. So how is that to, like, have a personal life and do different things?
Oh, you don't. and then on top of that, I have a morning radio show in San Francisco. So I like to keep busy, and the road certainly keeps you busy, and it gives you a lot of chance to catch up on Netflix and things like that. I don't know how comics did the road without Netflix and HBO Go and all these technologies that we have nowadays. I think that's why they did so much heroin, because they would just go to these hotel rooms in the middle of nowhere that they don't know anyone in the city, and they would just be really bored. So literally drugs was how they passed the time. Now we have Netflix, which is my new addiction.
And Hulu Plus? Is that in there anywhere?
Right. It's funny you say that. As we're talking about Hulu Plus, I'm about to get on a plane and fly to New York and play a part in the show Deadbeat, which is their hit show on Hulu Plus.
So how did you land Deadbeat?
I had to do an audition, you know, and it's that thing where you have to go into a room with all the other little people and just try to be more outrageous and what they're looking for. And thankfully, I guess I did that.
See, and I'm glad that you're saying this because, you know, like for someone like me, like I'm not an actress, not trying to be an actress, but I think, okay, wow, once you get on a show, you're on every show and you know everybody. So basically, you automatically have to walk through the door. You know, with someone like me who has no agent, nobody, anything, I'm thinking I'd have to audition. And I look at somebody like you, like, oh, he's already in there. He's connected. He's got everybody.
Oh, no, you still have to audition. It's funny because that same mindset definitely happened in the audition where you have guys like me and Wee Man, Jason Acuna, and a couple of little people that are a little more prominent. We walk in and then other guys like, ah, great, they're here. They're getting the part. And no, it's not always. It's not always how it works. So, but I don't really look at myself as being a famous little person. I think I'm number four on the list. You got Peter Dinklage, number one. You got B-Man number two, Warwick Davis number three, I'm number four, and then number five is the hot dwarf chick, Justin Bieber.
He's making his rounds, isn't he?
He's doing his part, that's for damn sure.
He's giving back to the community. He does his part. I know you said you were in school, so you dropped out of USC. What were you going to USC for?
I was going to school for communications when I dropped out, so don't worry. We didn't, like, lose a cancer cure when I decided to stop and do stand-up comedy. We're fine.
You're killing me. Okay, what were you going to do? Like, because if you weren't doing comedy right now, what would you be doing?
Believe it or not, I was trying to become a sports announcer. I thought, A, just the visual of me interviewing basketball players would be hilarious. And I thought I had a decent enough voice for it, so I said, yeah, I'm going to try to be a sports announcer. Then I started doing comedy, and literally the first time I was on stage, it was that moment where, I don't know if anyone else had this, but like everything in life became perfectly clear. It's like, oh, this is what I was put on this planet to do.
Wow.
So it was a really cool moment.
You basically just went from there. It wasn't like you were going to the improv and like, okay, I'm trying to get my big break. You're like, I'm just going to have a night of comedy, you know,
yeah.
Like some good laughs.
I was a fan. Yeah, I was a fan, and then, like I said, I got to go on stage, and thankfully, when I was on stage, I made the audience laugh, and that right there was the first whiff of crack. I was like, oh my God, now I'm chasing that high every damn night.
You know what, and I think that's the thing. It's like, if you do what you love, you're not really working, huh?
Yeah, amen. It's weird. People look at my schedule and see how much I'm traveling, and they see that I'm doing a morning radio show, and they see that I'm doing a podcast, and they see that I'm acting and doing all this stuff, and then they say, oh my God, you work so hard. And I go, who's working? This is fun. This stuff that I would do just on my own time. I mean, don't tell them that they don't have to pay me, but they literally wouldn't have to pay me.
Your secret is safe with me, my dear. I promise.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, how do you come up with the jokes? You know, do you just look at somebody and you just start going from there, or do you just think about things, or how does that work for you?
Here's the thing. I'm very jealous of other comedians because they are brilliant joke writers. They can sit down and write a joke and create from nothing. I'm not very good at that. Here's how I write my jokes. Step one, be a dwarf. Step two, wait. Funny stuff is going to happen to you. Like, even before I was doing stand-up, I would tell people stories about my life, and they would be cracking up. They're like, no way, that's real. I say, no, that's what happened to me. The first joke I ever told on stage was a true story where I just walked into a Starbucks, tried to order a tall coffee, and the entire staff there just lost it. Like, you can't have a tall coffee. You can't. Like, no, I want a freaking tall coffee. And there was that moment going back and forth. And then I said that on stage for my very first joke ever, and it got a big laugh. So I was like, Jesus, I don't sit down and write. I just got to wait until funny stuff happens to me.
As far as when you have an opening act, how do you pick your opening acts? I mean, what do you look for?
Well, I've been doing stand-up now for, 12 years. And thankfully, I've gotten to meet some really great people. There's some amazingly talented comics out there that people don't necessarily know about yet. My podcast partner, I have a podcast called About Last Night, and my podcast partner, Adam Ray, is hilarious. I love the dude. He's one of my best friends. So I love it when he opens for me. There's another comic named Eric Myers. This dude is going to blow up, and I'm honored to say that he's been my opening act for a while, so I can say, like, ah, I knew him first. But yeah, he's about to do huge things in this business. And there's so many great comedians, certainly in the L.A., Inland Empire area. Inland Empire area, you got the twins, Corey and Chad. You got Bruce Jingles. You got great local talent from the Inland Empire as well. So it's really just a plethora of comics to choose from.
What's the hardest part about being a comic, though, for you?
I don't know. It's kind of all fun. If I had to complain, and I don't want people to think I'm complaining, is just the travel. Dom Herrera, who is a great comic, has a saying that says, they don't pay me to go on stage, they pay me to get there. So they pay you to travel, because that's waking up early for flights and trying to get places on time and being in the air for 4 or 5, 6 hours. Yeah, that kind of sucks. But when you look at the jobs that people do on a day-to-day basis, you know, I'm not mining for coal. I'm not stuck in a cubicle. I'm not doing hard labor, and I'll take my job any day of the week.
When I was looking on your schedule, it looked like, okay, you were some places for a couple days, like 2-3 days. Do you have situations where you're just there for a day, or do you say, hey, if I'm coming out, I want to be here, get me 2 nights guaranteed? Or
I certainly have times where I'm just in town for a day, and I have times when I'm in town for a few days, but I want to be there for a few days because I want to experience the town. Like, that's the thing, is I don't stay in my hotel room. I go out into the cities. I try to experience the best local restaurants. If there's some sort of activity that everyone does, then absolutely. So, you know, I'll go down a river if that's what they do there. If they're skiing, I'll try to go skiing. If it's in the Inland Empire, I'll do meth. You know, it's just like whatever the locals are into.
Great. So basically, you became a comic so you could just get a free ride to every place.
Yeah, it's awesome. And that's the thing, is I hear comics all the time talk about, oh, how the life is so hard. The life is so hard. I'm living it going, holy crap, this is sweet.
The other thing, though, I was really curious, you know, because every place is different. Like, if you're going to Sacramento, there's one thing. If you're coming here, you know, to the Inland Empire, there's another thing. You're going to Baltimore. Do you do research, or how do you find out what you're going to talk about? Because obviously something that's going to kill in Baltimore might not kill in Ontario.
Oh, but see, here's the beautiful part about comedy. Funny is funny. If you sell it, if you believe in it, what's funny in Baltimore is funny in Ontario. There's minor tweaks that you have to change. But thankfully, through my travels and doing this as long as I've been doing it, you find out the differences. You find out what there is of a certain region of the country where they'll let you say something outrageous but won't want you so much to talk about a certain topic. I love it. It's always fascinating to me what the audience is and what they can be. And that's the thing. I love seeing the country because everyone goes off on how different we all are all over the country. Are you a red state? Are you a blue state? Are you in the South? Are you on the coast? Are you a flyover state? And then you fly to these states and you perform for these people and you go, oh, you're just people that want to laugh at jokes just like anyone else. It's great. It truly lets me realize how united this country truly is, because we have way more in common than we think. We all think fart jokes are funny.
At the end of the day, we all do. Thank you so much for your time, and take care, Brad. Thank you.
Bye.
That was Mindy McNeil in conversation with comedian Brad Williams. Tonight's KVC Arts has been a selection of past interviews which Mindy produced while at KVCR a few years ago. She'd moved since to KUVO in Denver. At KVCR, we just learned that Mindy passed away last week. And this wraps another edition of KVC Arts. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and Sharina Wadd. Thanks also very much to Mindy McNeil. Rest in peace. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.